Hey, everybody, this is Stelly Afti.
And this is Heaton Cha.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life, and hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
We want you to do your best.
And in today's episode of The Startup Chat, we're going to talk about a situation that I think a lot of founders might find themselves in one way or another, which is, you know, yesterday I was on the phone talking to a podcast listener, a Startup Chat listener. She's a CEO of a startup, you know, raised some money, built a cool product, was all excited, had some, you know, a beta program with lots of really amazing companies testing the software and giving amazing feedback. She felt like she's really on track to rule the world and do something amazing here. And then just last week, they came out of beta and they kind of emailed all their trial users trial users that now's the time to upgrade and to become a customer, and that the trial period and beta period is over. And way less than what they anticipated. The response was just horrible. Just almost nobody bought. And she went into panic mode, right? What do I do now? Holy shit, was everything we built a waste? Did we do this whole customer development thing wrong? I have employees, I have responsibilities, I have investors. A bunch more months of run rate, but what do I do? Do I have to let my employees like find them a job? Do I have to stop? Do I try to be profitable? Do I raise more money? She was a little bit in a holy shit, everything is not as great as I thought it is. What do I do now? Kind of panic mode. And hence why she reached out and we had a chat, and I got the permission to talk about it on a high level. And I thought that this is a situation so many founders find themselves in one way or another, that it might be worthwhile to talk about it. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Kind of when and how to panic and how to deal with the challenge or the situation she's in where she realizes what she's built is not where she thought it is. Not even saying it's not successful or it's useless or whatever. We don't know. Like, I don't think there's enough evidence of that yet, but it's definitely not where she thought it should be. And now she needs to decide what to do. What's next? How do I react to this?
She has 12 months of runway. Is that correct?
She has let's say a year, a year and a half of runway. Yeah.
Okay. First of all, it's really interesting that she would question these things about her team and her responsibilities. And realistically, it sounds like she still has 12 to 18 months left. And I'm sure she's built something of somewhat value. It's just that people aren't willing to pay for it. So I actually think the situation isn't as dire as she might be thinking it is.
Yep. So I love that that's the first thing that your first reaction, because that was exactly my first reaction as well.
That's awesome.
Right? I was like, all right, calm down, take a deep breath. I actually don't think this is that horrible. Like, here's what I said, and I mean it. I actually appreciate that she's taking the situation seriously. Because way too many times I see founders, you know, when they're at that moment where something happened that could shake up their reality, and they have the blue pill and the red pill, they decide to stay asleep. They go, oh, we wanted X amount of customers and nobody bought. Well, it's because we're lacking this and this feature. Oh, it's because I talked to the customers and they had really good explanations, quote unquote, read excuses. And I'm going to buy into these because they feed into my bias. And we're just going to pretend everything is great. And we're just going to keep going with the plan as if nothing happened. I rather have a founder that panics for a moment inwardly. She didn't announce this. She didn't rattle the cage. She didn't scream at people. She just internally got shook by that moment. I'd rather have that from a founder than somebody that's totally delusional and is not realizing, okay, this is serious. It's not as good as we thought it should be. What do we do now, right? So, but I didn't think, I'm like, there's still tons of time left. You know, I don't think now's the time to find jobs for everybody. You don't need a year to find jobs for everybody. Let's just calm down. There's still a good amount of money left, a good amount of time. And I don't think we know enough. This was my second thing, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I thought just based on the numbers, right? There's a few hundred people using this thing, maybe between 30 to 70 companies that were kind of on early access on this. And they send out an email saying that people have to upgrade and people didn't upgrade. I don't think that's enough data to decide that, to decide what to do, to be frankly. I think this is, the moment to learn more and figure out why they're not buying, what's going on, but not the moment to conclude this isn't working, right? So I thought both there's a ton of time left, and there's still a ton of thing we need to learn before we can make any decisions on what to do next.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement with what you're saying. One thing I'll say before we move on to other parts of this, it's a really big one. I was in a meeting the other day, and all of a sudden it came up that the company only had 12 weeks of money left, and in the room was the exact opposite reaction from the founder and the person who was the COO saying they only have 12 weeks left, and it was as if there was no panic at all.
Yep.
And I'm sitting there with my partner, my business partner, who, we're in this meeting, we're like panicking. We're like, wait, hold on, And honestly, that specific scenario was such a scenario that it never got resolved. Like, we're still, 12 weeks from running out of money. So I got to say that, you're right. It's great that she's actually worried about this when she has 12 to 18 months left, not just, 12 weeks. I commend her too. I want to dig underneath it. Are you ready?
Let's do that. But I've been in the situation myself before, just as you described, where even friends were telling me about the shockingly low number of days they have left in run rate. And I was like, all right, there's a time to panic, people, and the time is now. And I don't see it, and that makes me really uncomfortable. I just gotta say,
it's like, if I'm panicking and this is your damn company and you're not panicking, somebody's got a problem.
Either I'm crazy or you're crazy, but somebody's got a problem here.
Oh, you got it.
I think panic does not mean run around and scream and just jump off the balcony. Panic means that you realize this is an emergency situation and you have to act with urgency. Like, now, you have to fix the problem right now. You have to drive the patients to the hospital and keep them alive right now. There's no time to be like, let's wonder what are all the solutions to this problem and let's do some research over the next weeks. There's somebody bleeding money and they're going to be dead, in whatever it is, 12 weeks. We need to stop the bleeding ASAP. We need to save the patient. So I've been too many times in this situation where, as you said, when somebody realizes this is serious, I appreciate that. So let's dig a little deeper on this. So there's, I think that at the core of the issue for this founder was that they built something, and I took a look at the product. The product's really cool. I kind of get the idea behind it. So, it seems to have promise. And they found a user group or beta group that I think was very much leaning towards liking the premise of the product and liking the team behind the product, and therefore maybe or potentially being overly positive. And the founder itself, so that's one thing. There's a user group or the beta group may or may not have represented who the real buyers and may or may not have been too handpicked based on criteria that are not just, is this going to be the buyer, but also who would like this product the most. And in this case, I think that they might not be the same person. I'm a little unsure about the group of people that we did customer development with as one. Then the other potential challenge was that the founder itself, and she realized that and she communicated that to me, is a very passionate and very persuasive personality, to the degree where her excitement when pitching the product and when interacting with you might be You know, it might be a reality distortion field that captures you in the moment and makes you really, really excited about the product as well. But maybe it fades off a day later when she's not around anymore and you go, yeah, this is kind of a nice to have, but not really, you know, the solution to all my problems. So the kind of the burden of being too good at pitching and too good at, you know, making people passionate in the moment about your ideas or your product or your baby, and you know, influencing people even too much. So that was a kind of a second thing. And the third thing, well, let's get to these two things as potential issues for why they spend so much time building something, getting quote unquote feedback, but then realizing that they might have not learned enough during all this time of building and getting feedback.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming she had hundreds of people on the beta, correct? Or the early access?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, and so she seemed to have handpicked like a lot of rock star companies is probably what she did. You know, companies that are like popular Silicon Valley, Bay Area companies, which is a strategy. I've done that strategy before and seen it done. And, you know, there's some exuberance with that, especially when you have a passionate founder who people just don't want to say no to. So one key sign is, do they want to say no to this person? Are they willing to say no to this person? Because if they're not willing to say no to this person, then there's a chance that like she's basically falsely thinking she has traction with customers and paying customers. And instead, she's just really passionate and really charismatic, and she can get people to try something no problem. Right. And if all her emphasis has been on getting people to try, she might have not focused as much on are they getting value out of it, and expected that, you know, once she unveils like, oh, we're charging now, everyone will be cool. So things like watching retention, watching behavior, talking to customers very deeply about their problems and how they're, you know, using the product can sometimes just be sort of off to the wayside while you're just trying to get these really, you know, marquee kind of customers or users, actually, but you don't have a paid plan. So I've seen this before. I feel like her and her team might have led themselves to false beliefs around how much traction they actually had. And that's what I wanted to get underneath. It's like, you don't end up in this situation and feel the way you do with 12 to 18 months of runway left, unless you really, 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 really invested, you know, in this situation in such a way where it's like, you know, you were essentially you were in your own reality distortion.
Yeah, and I think that also, like, so that's definitely that could be one of the things that were going on. I think there's a chance that what didn't happen was really trying to uncover how much value do we create to people versus how much do they tell us they like it. Right, I'm always kind of proclaiming that we really don't want happy customers. We want successful customers. Right, happy is nice, but happy can mean other things as well. Happy can mean that this is an early adopter that really loves the brand or really likes the person they interact with in our company. But what happens when that person leaves their business and somebody else steps in that doesn't care about us, doesn't like anybody on our team particularly well, doesn't have any connection to us, and just looks at the product and the value that we create? Can that person do a simple math that says this makes us a lot more money than what it costs us, so of course we're going to keep paying for this? If they can't make that math, no matter how happy they are a churn risk, right? And they're a lost opportunity. So I'm really concerned that a lot of times when people do these beta runs, and in this specific case, the emphasis was all about, what do you like about this? Do you like this? What could it be? What are other ideas that you have? What are other things that you would like to see? And not to say that all these questions are totally irrelevant. They're all good questions, but a much better question, more crucial question is, using this thing, are you using it every day? And if you are, why? What is the value that we're creating? And if we wanted to translate that into money, how much money does this make you or save you? And I don't think that that conversation was ever had. Like, they never had that conversation. They never thought about that this way. They were just really concerned about building a really, really awesome product and building something for a certain user group that that user group would really, really like. But it seems like, and it seems like it early indications seemed that they were succeeding with that. But now they changed the question. Now they didn't just ask, do these people like this? They asked the question, are there people ready to pay for this? And the answer to that was no, at least so far. right? Those are some of this is one crucial thing that I'm really thinking that I think went wrong here, which is not focusing on how much value are we creating for these customers and can we quantify that value versus just focusing on how much do these people like what we do and how happy are they with it and, you know, how much positive reinforcement can they give us? Another thing on this, another interesting question here, and I brought up one thing that you've spoken about many times, and I said publicly I've learned from you about the customer development side of things, is to, as a overly passionate and you know, reality distorting founder, to not go out there and try to always kind of convince people that your hypothesis is right, but trying to disprove your own hypothesis, trying to convince people that you're wrong, or trying to find evidence that you're wrong or your hypothesis is wrong, because as founders, we're so optimistic and we're so passionate that we might just create the evidence when there is none, right? Or we might just see things as evidence that we're right when we shouldn't, because there really aren't evidence. So I love that kind of reverse engineering our own brain to make sure that we really do good customer development, get good data out of it.
Yeah, it's one of the key things that, you know, causes people to, I think, get into the situation where they just believe falsely that they're moving in the right direction. Okay, so go ahead.
So one more thing, and then let's talk about what to do, right, and what to do next. One more thing, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, is I think one other additional thing to all of this was unrealistic expectations. So let me ask you, if you have, let's say you have 50 or 60 companies that are beta testers, right? And a few hundred users that are attached to these. You send out an email and you tell people they have to upgrade now. How many companies would you expect to upgrade based on an email like that?
Yeah. How many? 50, you said? 100?
Yeah, 50. Let's say 50 companies representing a few hundred people.
I would be surprised if more than 10% converted.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, just generally speaking. It's very general.
Yeah. So, of course, you're lacking tons of context, as do I. But yeah, this, you're like, about 10%. Well, this founder, I'm not going to share, the conversion rate was less than that, right? So,
sure.
But this founder expected, I think, a 50 or 60% conversion.
You know what's funny? That's the exact number that was in my head of what I think most people would think.
Big. Yeah,
so,
there you go.
You know, I've heard that number before. So yeah, it's like they think half are going to convert. Well, not really.
Not really.
just not really. Never see that happen.
Yep.
Especially if they haven't given you your credit card yet.
Yeah.
50% convert if they gave you the damn credit card already. On a trial or something, you know?
All right.
So, yeah.
So, yeah. I've made that mistake many, many years ago myself on having just unrealistic expectations as somebody that just doesn't have enough experience in this, but just wanted to highlight this. Yeah, I mean, this is, if you expect 60% to convert and you get like less than whatever percent, way less than 10%, of course you're panicking, right? But that's maybe also because you had expectations that were just not realistic at all. So if you do a beta and then you send one email, it's crazy to assume that half of these people would just upgrade, pull out their credit cards and upgrade immediately. It just almost never happens, if not never. So, okay. So having all that out of the way, let's talk about what does she do now? Like, what do you do as a founder in this situation? What's the next steps?
Yeah, I mean, we have language for this now, right? She basically does some kind of pivot. You know, what I had wasn't working. I learned a bunch of things and I need to make a change. And I'm one to just be super honest with our team and just tell them, this is the time we have. Here are the options. Let's, you know, either decide this together or, you know, depending on the culture and team, it's like, I've decided it's this and here's how we're going to, you know, approach it. And then, you know, rally your team to go after it. I mean, this is normal startup problems, and a pivot is what most people would call what, you know, the way to move forward would be.
Yeah, you know, in her case, or in this specific case, I'm not even sure they're ready to pivot yet. Like, for me, it seems like one email and not enough people converting, that doesn't tell me like the whole story. One thing that I would do, and one thing that I told her as advice, is make sure you have a phone call with every single of these companies. Make sure that you truly understand what is the value that this created for you in the past, and why isn't that enough? And it's not like they're charging some insane amount of money, so it can't be that it's so expensive. So what is it?
And really, is your intuition that there's something there, and it might still work, like in its current form, like the product?
Yeah. I'm just curious. So I do think that there is something there. I think that it's kind of a little bit of a new category, so it might be really hard to describe to people. It might be really hard to for people to have a budget for this or know how to categorize this and then to purchase it. And I'm not sure if the person they've been talking to in those companies, if that's really the buyer, right? It might be, but it might not be. I'm just not 100% convinced. They probably over-engineered what they have, so maybe a real.
So yeah, let's give the clarity, right?
Yeah.
What I was talking about is what they were going to have to do next, no matter what.
Yeah.
What you're talking about is how they get to making the decision of what the pivot looks like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I like it. And you have a lot more context, obviously. That's why I was asking.
Right.
About like kind of the situation. Yeah. Sounds interesting. I can probably even guess, not necessarily the company, but the category.
Yeah.
Just based on that, right? There's a few categories out there right now that are like sketchy like that.
So, right, as you said, you know, so let me comment on something else you said, which I think is super important, which is you have to be transparent, talk to the troops, rally them, you know, empower them to work together, figure things out, right? What needs to happen next? How do we choose what to do next? And there, you know, my general advice in these situations are, you know, as a founder, you need to collect your thoughts. You need to, I don't think you have to figure out the perfect solution, but I think you have to have a rough game plan. So when you sit down with a team, you can tell people, here's the situation. It's very serious. I'm very concerned. And I think here are the three steps we need to take to move forward and to get out of this. What do you guys think? What's your comments on the situation and the rough kind of next steps? And then not have things sketched out as the next steps, but have some kind of this is what should happen next. Do you guys agree or disagree? If you agree, you know, I need, you know, you three people to help figure this out. I need these other people on the team to figure this other thing out. Here's our timeline. Let's rock and roll. It's time for us to shine. It's time to really kick some ass. But it typically needs, when there's a crisis or when there's some really bad news and you bring the team together, you have to be transparent, but I also feel like you have to have a little bit of clarity on what to do about the situation. What usually doesn't work well is if you bring the troops and you tell them, this is what it is, and I feel horrible, and I don't know what to do. What do you guys think we should do? That's usually not a great recipe for moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. What I'll usually do is, if there's co-founder, talk to my co-founder. If there's somebody, depending on the size of the team, someone responsible for a bunch of other people in the company, go talk to them, have some plan, have some alignment, and then move forward as you suggested, where you have some kind of idea of what's happening. Because when there's a crisis or even a situation like this where you have to change direction, your team has to look to you to set the high-level direction.
Yeah.
At least, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's fine for people to speak up and maybe to adjust the direction, right? Or to see, oh, there's a flaw in my plan. But they're going to look for you for general, like, okay, we're in a bad situation, but does this person still seem confident or do they seem calm? Is this still a person I want to follow in trying to figure this out, right? And that's usually not a good situation to have like group brainstormings. This is the situation where real leadership is required and somebody needs to take charge and go, right, this is the direction we're going down. This is why everybody can have a say, but we're going, right? Or at least I have a real strong proposal and I've thought it through. And I feel like when you give people the honest truth, but you also give them clarity on what needs to happen next, I think that that is kind of the best mix to really empower people to step up and really help overcome this challenge as a company.
So before or after you start talking to her customers?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I think, I don't know if I have a strong opinion, but I think she could have this conversation before even talking to the customers. There's results. Everybody in the company probably knows this. I'm pretty sure most people in the company had some kind of an expectation that probably were related to the founder's expectations, right? So it can't be that this founder is isolated in their disappointments. Other people will also be disappointed in the team. Other people will feel that founder's disappointment. So I don't think, and talking to customers might take a lot of time. It might, you know, lead you to different directions. I don't know if I would try to figure out the perfect solution first before I talk to everybody. Yeah, so I think in her case, I would even talk to the team before having more extensive customer conversations.
Makes sense. Yeah, maybe they can help talk to the customers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Do we have a tip to wrap up the episode?
Yeah. when you're that challenged, you know, in your startup, regardless of how much time or whatever you have left, one thing I don't see entrepreneurs or founders do, you know, often enough, is they don't pick up the phone and call somebody and just start talking about it. Could even be like, you know, one of your parents, both of your parents, you know, grandma, whatever, just to talk about it and be like, yo, this is the situation. I know, you know, you might not know my business, but here's the situation. Here's how I'm feeling, you know, like, you can use them as a sounding board to make sure like how you're feeling about it is actually, you know, the right way to feel about it. And someone unrelated might not even know much about your business. I've found that to be valuable sometimes.
You stole my thunder, sir. Every time I ask, what are the tips? It's the moment I ask myself, what is my tip? And I'm pretty sure that's the truth for you as well. In that moment, I was like, oh, yeah, I know what I'm going to say. And then you said the exact same thing that I wanted to say. All right. So, well, I'm just going to add to that then. I think asking for help is difficult. It seems difficult for me, and I seem to find this being a difficulty for many other founders that are friends of mine. So I totally agree. Ask for help. And sometimes I think the best person to ask is somebody that can relate to your problem, but is not invested in it. And I think that's the reason ultimately why she wanted to talk to me, was that she knew me a little bit. She had heard enough episodes to know that, all right, to have the feeling that she can trust me and that we've gone through a lot. But she also knew I'm not invested in this. Like I'm not a founder, I'm not a co-founder, I'm not her team, I'm not an investor. I ultimately can talk with some level of distance to the problem and be emotionless because I have no vesting in it. And she can tell me the truth because she doesn't have to be afraid of my reaction or any impact implications based on how I react, right? If I won't get upset, I won't get into a panic, that there's no real involvement or attachment. So I think finding a person like that, I think anybody you want to talk to or you can talk to is somebody you should talk to, just let it out, hear your own thoughts and be able to kind of express how you feel in the moment. But a good place sometimes to go and talk is somebody that has experience in that situation, that has gone through that situation before, but that's not directly impacted by anything that will happen out of your situation, so that the person can be kind of a good advisory board and sounding board. So I think that is kind of what worked yesterday on our call, and so that's definitely something I would advise people to do. And if you don't know anybody, that if you're ever in that situation, you don't know anybody you could reach out to, can always reach out to the two of us.
Yep. Of course. Okay, that's a wrap.
I think that's a wrap. We'll hear you guys very soon.